time is a time for crossing barriers, for erasing old categories, for probing around.
You're having great fun. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight we're going to discuss, do you want to talk about Land of the Lost and dinosaur movies?
It's not really a dinosaur movie.
It's more of a monster movie, alien movie.
No. It's, I mentioned this to you, it's a rather adult PG-13 pseudo-parody, pseudo-action, adventure film, with miscast people, and a very odd script, directed by someone who probably shouldn't have been directing this type of movie, but it's marketed as a children's film, and so that throws a whole slew of problems into it. Did you ever watch the show?
I saw a few episodes on Saturday morning.
Explain basically what the show is about.
Okay. Land of the Lost is like a father and his two kids on a camping trip or something, and then they sing it in the song, and I don't remember. I just remember it like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
He ends up writing a song in the movie.
Yeah.
He finds a banjo for some reason.
That's great. I would love that. And, like, there's a crack in the earth, and they fall down underground, and there's a pyramid, and there's, like, there's Chaka, like, this, like, primate that's pseudo-humanish
primate.
Primate. And then there's these lizard men, and then there are dinosaurs. And I was never really clear, but it always seemed like there was, like, kidnapping of the kids, and then it was, like, the same plot every time. And some pyramid. And
like obelisks type deals.
Obelisk things. Yeah, it was kind of like on the creepy end for that stuff. Like I was like, what's all this weird pseudo-spiritual stuff going on?
So,
whatever.
Because here's the thing. I never saw it. So there was probably a lot that went over my head. But...
I'm sure.
Yeah, my point is this. No, it must have. Because they really, I think, there was a lot of stuff that was weirdly funny to me that I had no idea why they were doing. For instance... There was this golden sleestack stack inside a crystal that they find, and he keeps saying crystals, and he pronounces it that certain way, and he keeps saying things about moving through time and space, and he says it in a certain way, and he repeatedly says
it
over and over.
It must be a reference to the cartoon.
It has to be a reference to the show.
Way one of the actors.
And he keeps doing it, and they do a slight pause afterwards, like you're supposed to get it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of weirded out by it, and I found that amusing, you know?
Yeah.
But basically, what they do is this. They will feralize the whole deal. McKay is a distant producer on it. Sid and Marty, who are got to be in their like 80s by now or something, are producers on it. Anyway, it starts with... the whole Matt Lauer deal you've seen on
the thing.
So it starts with Matt Lauer's mocking him for his
Tom Cruise style.
For his theories, because he says, I got to say, I
fought. Is he being glib to him?
He says, he says, I kind of fought for you to be on the show because what you presented is not science at all. He's interested in time warps, and he says he's made this tachyon amplifier that can, and he says, it wouldn't take you back in time, but it'll move you interdimensionally to a different dimension where
time
and space
are,
and so basically it's like a collection of all time and space into this other dimension, and Matt Lauer of course mocks him, and they get into this is the usual thing, he pulls out a pipe while he's talking to him, and he goes, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's just a pipe, I'm gonna smoke it. And he's like, you can't smoke that here. And he's like, well, I wasn't told I could do that. And he's about to light it, and he, you know, they end up, it's all that sort of deal, and that all, it all pays off by the end. But basically the problem with any Will Ferrell movie now is that I watched Semi-Pro recently. It's the same character every time, sure, but you give him different savant qualities. He's really good at one thing, but as stupid and childish as he is, he shouldn't be, and so it's unbelievable. And it's shot as a more realistic adventurous type deal. It had a good look to it, and the sets are alternately extremely fake-looking on purpose,
mm-hmm.
Or very real-looking, like in the desert and things like that. Obviously spent a bunch of money on it. But 2 years later, or 3 years later from that ordeal, he's teaching at some school, and he's a, you know, he's a laughingstock, and he's teaching some kids some stuff, and the chick from Anna Friel from Pushing Daisies. Is she British or not?
Not in the show.
Okay, not in the show.
You'd probably be able to tell. You're better than I am about accents for actors.
It was a slight accent, so I really couldn't tell. I didn't know what the point of her being British would be.
I can tell Canadian sometimes.
I don't know what the point of her being British would be if she wasn't in this, because here's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Will and Holly were the names of the kids in the show. Holly is her, in this case, which is a grad student who comes to say, I've followed your whole career, and
I believe you.
I was kicked out of Cambridge for thinking you actually had a point and all this stuff. And then Will is the Danny McBride character, who's this scheming, drunk, pot-addled tour guide for this place called, like, the Devil's Canyon in the Mojave Devil's Cave. And it's basically, like, it's like one of those... It looks like the building from Go with the big devil's face in front of it. And he takes
him into it. That was when they had that rave, right?
Yeah, and he takes him into it, and they and there's a raft, and they go kind of... it's ridiculous. Anyway, like...
But the raft's just like 55-gallon drums that are cut in half, like
no, it was a real raft, but he tells them, like, you know, this is a place that is an amazing place full of all... You know, it's obviously some lines. Actually, one of the funniest things is, I think it might have been the guy... Did you see Eastbound and Down at all?
Yeah, I saw the whole thing.
So you know Clegg?
Yeah.
So
that's the guy that co-wrote or was involved with Foot Fist Way.
Right, yeah. And he was also
Ben Best.
Ben Best, yeah. So I think
he was Chuck the Truck.
It looked like it was him. Like it could have been him. And he was kind of the assistant who popped in. And at the end of the movie, one of the funniest things is this isn't really much of a it's not really a spoiler, it doesn't matter. Holly and Dr. Rick Marshall come back from wherever, you know, wherever mm-hmm. they were, Land of Lost. And the Clegg guy kind of pops his head around the corner of the cave, and he goes, where's Will? And they go, he's gone. And there's this long pause, and he goes, you murder him? And they're like, no, he's in a better place. He's like, oh, okay. Like, he works there, like, they're partners in this place,
yeah.
And he doesn't care, but the first question he has is, did he murder him? And he just kind of, like, nonchalantly walks away.
It sounds delightful.
There's good stuff like that in it, and then it's like, but it's just full of this adventure stuff. It just doesn't work. And
but is it at least like fun to watch between jokes?
It was mostly no. The jokes are the fun part to watch, and then everything else is too earnest.
Hmm. So it kind of like gets too serious
because Will Ferrell doesn't work in earnest.
Yeah,
unless he's really playing earnest. Like, you know, what was that one he's in that everyone likes? That I never saw.
I never saw it either. The Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah, yeah. And they say he was good in that, and I tend to believe people is when they say something.
I kind
like
of
that.
Want to try to watch that.
Sure. It sounds boring to me, but yeah. Anyway, like Yorma Taccone is from, you know,
from Incredibad.
Exactly.
He's on a
lone
boat.
Down guy. He's Chaka.
Uh-huh.
And halfway through it, I didn't even know that. Halfway through it, I was like, that's Yorma. I know that's Yorma. That's so weird. And like, what's the point of that? Because this guy's in makeup. He's not speaking. He's grunting and making.
He's just having fun.
Anyway, he probably got paid too much for it. And then it's like, you know, all of his dinosaurs chasing him. He keeps insulting the dinosaur, saying its brain is the size of a walnut. Eventually, the dinosaur they hear its footsteps and it drops something huge in a leaf on their doorstep of the cave, and they open it and it's a walnut this big. Like indicating that like this dinosaur has been listening to him all movie and being really angry.
And it's like, well, that's what a walnut is. So
yeah.
That's pretty big, don't you think?
And then there's the Sleestak stuff and various, like, a lot of dinosaur based stuff. But the funniest stuff is McBride, just as Will Ferrell plays the same character every time, McBride does the same thing also. But their interplay works.
Oh, okay.
It totally does work.
I can see that.
Better than it does in Eastbound and Down, because in Eastbound and Down, McBride's a protagonist, even though he's an evil, awful, terrible person. And then Ashley Schaefer, BMW,
yeah.
which is
Will Ferrell. I'm Ashley Schaefer,
yeah.
BMW.
Yeah. that part in episode 5, when...
5 was the greatest.
He comes over and he's like, don't you do this in front of me. I'm Ashley Schaefer, all this stuff. And then McBride hits him and he goes, dick punching's my game. Dick punching's my game. As he backs away.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, But in this it was like the nice Will Ferrell character, the nicer, who's still an egotistical man child,
yeah.
Playing with the McBride character really worked. It really did, and it was mostly
kind of
poke
at each other.
Yes, and it was mostly due to the McBride character,
of course,
because after a while they get used to each other,
mm-hmm.
and then their jibes are more like
friendly,
almost friendly,
yeah,
not quite, but almost
like ours.
And then, you know, the funniest thing is at one point they end up drinking these gourds that Chaka tells them out of these gourds that he tells them this is a delicious drink. And Holly Cantrell can, she can translate because it's some primal dialect that she ended up studying somewhere, something ridiculous like that. And she tells them this long thing about how it's this great celebratory drink. And then she's like, oh, wait, I translated that wrong. It's a terrible, horrific psychedelic that will make you feel like you're being torn apart on the insides by all this stuff. And then at the very end, she stops. And then she's like, oh, wait, I mistranslated that. It's not what I just said. It's being torn apart by a devil's dick. Like, it gets worse and worse. And the whole time, Chaka's like, drink up, you know? Like, so they end up drinking tons of it anyway. And the funniest part of the movie is there's this long chunk where they're sitting there wasted out of their minds, and they're eating, like, a gigantic crab had exploded, so they're eating its meat, and they just have this ridiculous conversation about how, like, McBride's, like, seriously right now, like, I'm being really serious, like, just between the three of us, you know, how much money would it take for you and Chaka to make out French kiss right now? And he goes, if just the three of us, just the three of us talking right now, I'll do it for free. And like just a long conversation about that. And he's like, they never really like look each other in the face. And they're just kind of like, well then do it. You know, like that sort of thing. And it's just like the parts of the movie where the plot isn't progressing.
Yeah.
Are actually very funny.
I could see that being the case with a lot of those kinds of comedies.
So, me not expecting any of that and just expecting the awful junk in the trailer, that's where I was pleasantly surprised by it.
So, like pleasantly surprised for this means what? Are you giving this like a 3?
I think I would probably give it, I want to say a 2.5.
Okay.
But that translates to a 3 being that I got a positive, I enjoyed the thing.
Okay.
So, probably a 3.
Wow. Okay, that's good. That's a good recommendation for Land of the Lost, and I guess that falls into that realm of comedies where the plot isn't what you're there for. You're there for like the scenes
it really
in between.
Really was.
And I think there are a lot more films like that these days. Comedies where, you don't really. I think Forgetting Sarah Marshall kind of had a plot you could follow and you kind of like care about the character and stuff because he wasn't a hateful character. You know,
no,
he was like kind
no,
of a regular
guy. He was a nice guy, but he was just kind of a. But I mean,
so like you kind of like cared about seeing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those, like you said, this Jody Hill, Eastbound and Down, that kind of stuff, is really more about those scenes where who cares about him trying to like become a pitcher again or anything. You know, it's more about those in-betweeners.
You kind of, with his stuff, you kind of watch it wondering if this terrible person is actually going to do anything good at any point.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of ends up being what it is.
Except that can turn into that whole, like, overly earnest, and it doesn't work, and it just is embarrassing kind
really,
of
really,
thing.
Really the funniest part in that whole series, like, I like the whole episode 5 thing, but in episode 6 when I always forget this guy's name. It's the guy who, in Step Brothers, who is the terrible, mean brother.
Yeah, that guy.
His name was Adam something.
Yeah. When he shows up.
He comes up and he talks about how, like, he's, you know, let's F and not let's, and they get so
the
far,
kids
but
in,
bring those kids in, we'll F those kids.
Like, no,
and he's
no,
like, dude,
no.
You just went way too far. And he's like, I know, I got a problem with that, I apologize. Like,
the kids was too far, that was too far with the kids. No, that was hilarious.
That was great.
That was like,
and then he calls him at the end of the episode, he's listen, I've had a lot of problem with pills and stuff lately, and I wasn't supposed to tell you any of that, and I'm not really affiliated with the team right now. I'm just trying to hoping that I could get back on the team if I sign someone big, and that was devastating. They picked it up.
Yeah,
picked it up. Second season.
I know. I've heard that they. I could. I can't imagine that they wouldn't have. You know what I mean? It was getting enough buzz.
Yeah, it was getting enough buzz. I just figured that no one was really watching it, despite the buzz. That's just that's the type of thing that like people who know who Danny McBride is or Jody Hill is would be like, oh, sweet. Like honestly, who knows?
There's no vampires.
Who knows who those people are?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I don't know. How did when all the dust was settled? How did something like Observe and Report end up doing? In terms of like, was it considered a success?
I don't even know what it made. It was definitely a critical success. I don't know what it ended
because
up
like you know the whole audience was sitting there having a good time throughout the movie, which is weird, you know, because usually they're the ones that laugh at the stupid stuff, right? And they were laughing at stuff that was, I guess, less stupid.
Well, here's the thing. I think
the
same audience,
audience
who saw that probably saw Hangover too. And here's the thing: I think they were laughing at was swear words.
Oh.
That's kind of the entry level thing.
Swear
for
words and
people.
Flopping dicks.
Sure.
And so
that's
that
good.
Was the stuff that
that's
was
good.
In both.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. If you eliminate all of the other variables, then you could get down to what makes for a good. So do you have plenty of swear words and flopping dicks in the comedies that you're writing right now?
None. None of either.
You're not going to make it.
No.
You're not going to make it. What about references to other movies and pop culture?
Oh, I try to keep away from that as much as possible.
Because I just want to write a completely unmarketable comedy.
I wrote this thing, actually, that...
an utterly hilarious but completely unmarketable
comedy. Thing I wrote, I said something about how... it was talking about... Oh yeah, it was the ex-president pilot thing I did where, I kept getting told by different producers and other people that Luke was showing it to take this line out, but I kept making new variants of it because I loved it so much. And it was this thing about it was the only kind of reference to any sort of not pop culture thing, but there was something about how he was trying to convince himself that it was good that he was getting voted out after his first term. Because he didn't want to stay in office so long enough that he would be old and decrepit and senile and stuff. And then he mentions that by the time Ronald Reagan left office, he had more holes in his brain than, or the holes in his brain were bigger than like Sandy Duncan's eye was one of them. And then people were like, "That's way too mean." So I changed it to something like. His brain had more holes in it than Edward Olmos's face.
And
like,
or pox in it or something.
I ended up doing a bunch of variations on that until like suddenly, you know, I don't remember. But I refused to let go of that one. And culture references are definitely not necessary most stuff, because considering the fact that even if you did write a script that got sold, most likely it would bounce around places until it got picked up finally by a director 10 years mm-hmm. down the road or something, and your options already run out at that point, so you have to re-option it.
Oh, and boy.
But by then, your pop culture references are completely null and void. So
they just rewrite them. They bring somebody else
in. You bring Lonely Island to rewrite it. But if that was the case, then maybe I would get Pam Brady credit for the whole thing. So
that'd be cool. You can survive it, I suppose.
So what have you seen lately?
Let's see. What have I seen lately?
You need to give a state of anime address?
I can give a state of anime address. Continuing to watch Claymore. I just got through the 8th episode. Some pretty good stuff. Pretty good violence. Mostly female protagonists, so that's good for the progression of anti-gender stereotypes or whatever. I've been watching through... what have I been watching? Some Little Escaflowne, which I watched a while ago. Which I always remember was very confusing at the end. Sometimes when stuff confuses me, it like frustrates me to the point where like I'm going to revisit that. I didn't make sense to me. I didn't really like it that much, but I want to go find out why.
So you waste the time to go through the whole deal again.
Yes. Because I'm the opposite of the 10-minute rule. I'm like that. If I don't like it in the first 10 minutes, then I'm probably going to end up watching it again later to find out if I will still not like it. And, I mean, I really, for the adventure and everything, and, you know, it's got good music and all that, so that one's fun. It's gotten better in the latter half, too. The later half. Watched, Skycrawlers. The Mamoru Oshii, sort of, I wouldn't call it really steampunk or anything. It's really just like a fighter pilot, alternate reality kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably set like in the 50s or something like that, maybe set in the 40s. And I enjoyed that. It was weird though, because I really went into it with like a very like wanted to really like it, wanted it to be a certain kind of thing, but I was pretty sure it wasn't, you know. I was like, I wanted it to be like big high adventure steampunk kind of thing, but I was pretty sure it wasn't going to go that way with Oshii behind it. I thought it would be a lot of what it was, which is a lot of like people sitting and talking, right. and all of that. But it still ultimately ended up kind of winning me over by the end. So I wrote a review. It's on the ForgottenReviews.com. You can check that out there. I watched... God, I want to say I watched a few other things that were kind of fun. But mainly just piecing through series and stuff. I'm probably better off at doing... I can do discussions on things once I've finished watching them.
So you started watching a violent nudity cop show.
Mad Bull 34.
Mad Bull
34. Violent nudity cop is the best way to put it, yes. There was a line, and you talk about like great, like terrible, there was a line a cop used when he was talking to a perp in the second one, where he's like talking about how he's going to take the perp to like his kid's school and bracelets and like show him off to the kids, you know? He's like, that way the kid will know that his pop's so low that he'd have to parachute out of Snake's asshole. I'm like, this is great. this is delightful.
That's good.
It's just fraught with, I mean, you know, I'm watching the dubs and stuff. Yeah.
You said there was lots of
there's gratuitous nudity and violence,
decapitations.
There's like gun-based decapitations. Nice. Like shoot somebody like 5 times in the head to the point where like his neck gets cut in half and he decapitates. Nice.
I would really.
I've got the first one. I'll let you borrow it.
I would be remiss to not watch this show.
I think you might be with that. Yeah, the Mad Bull. His name's John Estes, Officer John Estes, in the 34th Precinct in New York. Everyone calls him Sleepy, though.
Oh, good.
Because he's sleeping like in the first episode a little bit, and that's it. He's this giant guy, and then his new partner is a Japanese American named Daburo. No, I can't. I don't forget his first name. It sucked because I was repeating it a bunch earlier.
Is there any sort of through line?
I don't know. I've only watched the first two. It seems like...
Are they trying to find the cop who smells of sunflowers?
No, there's no cop who smells of sunflowers, I don't think. I think it's one of those, like OAVs. It's kind of just like different stories. Each one is long enough to kind of do its own full story. It's like 45 minutes an episode.
You know, if Samurai Champloo was realistic at all, they would never have found the guy because basically what they were going around was asking... Hey, listen, have you know the sunflower, the sunflower samurai, the guy who smells like sunflowers? And people would be like, no, I don't know what that means. That's a really vague, awful description. I'm sorry, but that doesn't describe anyone I've ever met or ever will meet.
So that's pretty much how it goes for them to a degree. But they get like little clues. It's mainly more that like the government actually starts coming after them is what it sort of becomes. They're
digging it up too much.
Well, they cause enough strife in like other unrelated things. Like at the checkpoint and other things that they draw, their attention is drawn to them, and then they send the blind woman after him with the, that was right. I watched the baseball episode of Champloo, so I'm going to finish it this Saturday, probably watch the 3-parter again, which I really enjoy the fights and stuff. I get a kick out of that stuff, but the baseball one was great. I always love,
I like how it showed them all dying. I know we mentioned this before. Yeah. Everyone dies basically.
Yeah. I'm on my way out. And then he gets kneed and it goes ting. And it's all super sad and everything. But then it talks about how Mugen got to save the country, save the world or whatever, because he prevented them from ever coming back till later. You know, the Americans didn't come back till later. But I like I don't know that guy. I wish that guy would do more stuff. That Watanabe guy.
What's he doing?
He did like a 15-minute short for, I guess, him and a bunch of other directors got together and created this. I think it's 4C or something like that. I don't really know. It's a production company, Studio 4C, I think.
And so who's the creator of Bebop?
Well, it's I think it's like a collective of people at Sunrise, which goes under one name.
So it was kind of like a corporate entity that
sort of Well, all that stuff is if you listen to like how anime like actually.
Well, because I know a lot of stuff ends based off of manga and stuff like that.
Well, there's that.
And Bebop and Champloo weren't either, right?
No.
So yeah, those were just kind of like
It was just like, I don't even know. They basically said they came to him and said, "Here, you had some success off Macross Plus. You were a co-director on that." Mm-hmm. Do a space show. We want you to do a show that has to do with space and maybe some mecha stuff, you know, because there's these genres. And the whole thing is it's all advertising-based. Like, basically, the sponsors pay for them to animate the show. And so it's like this cereal company saying, do something that we can sell cereal with, which is weird when you look at the kind of stuff that gets added. So that's why anyone that says anime sucks, I would say, 99% of the time, you're right. It's just that it's so vast that there's so
many. 99 is a pretty high number, man. I'd almost say, considering everything I've seen and the fact that I really didn't, there's nothing about anime that I ever wanted to like going in, I'd say it's more like 50-50.
50-50 is too low. There's a lot of, I mean, even I'll admit that like I watched a lot of stuff that was just not that great.
Well, maybe you just watched a lot of junk.
Well, but I've watched a lot of good stuff too. But I'm saying that it's probably like 80%. Good, 80% bad and 20% good, but that show was just a weird one. It didn't even get all of its episodes originally aired on television. They cut the heart out of it. Like it was a crazy, all the really good ones, because it was too violent, I guess. Which is weird because it's really, I mean, like compared to something like Mad Bull, which is like an adult show, I guess maybe because it's like being talked about rated for television or something. It had to be like a PG-13 or something like, which it's not in like.
Well, the first episode is like violent gun battle right off the bat and stuff.
Pretty much. And the fifth episode and all that. Yeah. He directed that show and he just wanted to talk. He talked about wanting to be a world that was lived in. And that was cool, you know? I mean, because like the whole show feels old. in terms of, like, everything feels dusty and dirty and lived in and dingy and messy. There's nothing terribly clean and pristine, and there's, like, a lot of good background animation. Not even animation, just good background drawings.
You know, one thing that the directors really excelled at is in this work, the same way in Champloo, is that I used to talk about being lived in, is that it not only feels like that, but it feels like the worlds are very well populated.
That's and true.
You get the sense of the real people in the background and in every town they go to and the ramifications of everything that they do on the people around them. Champloo had a more, you know, with Bebop, when you make up your own futuristic world, it's usually devoid of any sort of subtext that's already existed.
Mm-hmm.
And in Champloo, they had a really fantastic backdrop to it. For all its faults, it had the you know, basically it was the thing about stemming the tide of progress, especially coming from European countries, and at the very background of it, with the sunflower samurai dude, is the fact that there was this cavalcade of Christianity growing that was being stomped out by the government.
Yeah.
Of this old school government that was trying to hang on to the last vestiges of their power. And that's a very interesting and I would say unique, but it's almost just like a historical thing to put on this stuff with the weird anachronistic stuff with the hip hop and you throw the hip hop culture in there and the graffiti culture and the breakdancing culture and all the stuff and it's
another case where it's a great idea. It's not a perfect show, and especially if you view it in the context of something like Bebop, which, like you said, has so many things and throws in the jazz and all that. Mm-hmm. And you see it as, like, trying to do the same thing with, like, hip-hop and breakdancing and, like, and samurai. You're like, oh, it's just trying to kind of do bebop but with samurai and hip-hop instead of, right, like, jazz and space. If you just looked at it like that, it's amazing that it works.
Totally.
Because you could go at it, you could approach it with, like, is that really what they're going to just do, is try to remake it?
And the more stuff I see, and now having seen that entire series, the more I can say that is one of the better anime series I've seen. And I'm sure it has a large part to do with the director. I mean, this guy knows, obviously, how to make a very well-told collective of stories. Because as you said, they both, Bebop and Champloo, both dip in and out of the main storyline. And the standalone stuff is no better or worse. In fact, sometimes is better in both cases. When they have to dip back into the main storyline stuff, in Bebop, sometimes the mood is altered to the point where it becomes very thick to trudge through because it's dark, kind of depressing.
It can be that way, yeah.
And Champloo's never gets to that, but probably
on the end it does.
By the end,
but
it does.
But it's deserved. It's supposed to be that.
Yeah, way. Yeah, yeah.
And they kind of do that stupid baseball episode to kind of let you know, okay, we're done with all the fun stuff now, and they have a different song at the end.
I'm still going to say that the main problems I really had with Champloo really come back to, and we talked about this, is character based in the form of
it's just I appreciate
giving small bits and pieces of characters at a time, but when it amounts to as little as it does in Champloo about their overall characters, you still really know nothing about them at the end.
That's true.
Anything I said about it at the time in the podcast we talked about it was all stuff that I made up on my own inference from it. It's not anything that's ever explicitly stated or anything that's really given to you.
To a large degree, you don't get a lot,
Like, what drives them, you're kind of meant to infer it off of whatever you want to.
Yeah, and I mean, that can be, you know, it's that weird...
That's good or bad.
It's that weird good or bad thing,
But I mean, in Bebop, every character had a specific drive. They all had their motivations, and their motivations were very particular,
mm-hmm,
and their personalities are very particular, and even though the personalities of Gene and Mugen were pronounced at times, there was no, you know, and they're meant to be motivationless characters for the most part, but then certain times something said will make them be like, huh, like, pay attention, because that's their own personal thing.
Yeah,
you know, Gene's got the thing with his old
master
dojo master dude. And Mugen's got, I don't know, you know, who knows what. He's got some pirate junk from back in the day. But that's mentioned in one episode.
He's got
the
angry...
And then they every once in a while touch back into the thing where he dies, but they don't let him really die.
Yeah.
And he sinks back out, and he seems sometimes upset by that and sometimes excited by that. Like, yeah, I didn't die. And other times he's like, oh, I didn't die.
Mm.
And you're never told anything about that. Like, why that matters to him. What drives him? Is it to be, like, every once in a while they say something like, oh, I think I'm the best in the world. So give us a little more to indicate that maybe what keeps Mugen going is him trying to find someone who can kill him because he thinks he's the best, and that's all that's kept him alive.
But the great part, part is that you can infer that, and you can feel pretty confident that that's pretty accurate. Because like even in the first episode, he's like, are you ready to die? Are you prepared to die? And he's just like, hell, every damn day I have to ask myself that, you know. And I think Mugen is actually a pretty sparse character in that. He doesn't totally say sparse. A hell of a lot.
Gene is more filled out than him, but Gene is like a robot.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's meant to be, you know.
Yeah. I think they play him up for comedy a lot more than they play Mugen up. His behavior is, he's probably one of the more nihilistic characters.
I just would have liked more.
I'm totally with you on that.
Like, and if it had more along those lines. It would have been really a fantastic. I mean, I think it is great anyway. But I think
just
it
about
been
four more episodes that are more character drawn and stuff. I'm with you there. I'm with you there almost always about that sort of stuff. And to be honest, maybe that's what he'll do with his next show because the guy always talks about how he would have liked to have told longer form stories like in Bebop and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's why he really enjoyed doing the movie because it was a bigger, long story. Right. And then in Champloo, there's a lot of two-parters. There's a three-parter to end it.
Yeah.
And so that would be cool. But the last thing he did was just part of an anthology with all these other guys. It was called Baby Blue, and I haven't seen it yet. It just sounds like it's like 15 minutes of a slice of life. Two people, like a boy and a girl, walk around and try and sort of spend this day like as if it were their last day. It sounds very like kind of like, okay, get this out of your way, get this out of your system and get back to doing something awesome. You know, do your little pretentious, quiet, artsy thing.
Sure, sure.
But the thing is,
that's what I feel like every time Satoshi Kon comes out with something that isn't like horror based or something like that, paranormal based or whatever.
He did Paranoia.
Well, I mean Paranoia Agent, and then Perfect Blue is brilliant.
I have to check that out.
It's fantastic. It's a fantastic psychological thriller, and it's kind of almost like a horror film. It's almost like a Hitchcock horror
film. Paprika was kind of a horror film. I'm going to check
Paprika
that out, too.
Paprika is crazy weird.
I'm going to check that
and
out.
I watched the first half, and I was up so late last night that I fell asleep, but the first half of it, the guy just knows how to make the creepiest looking imagery. And no matter what the subject is about, he can scare you out of your mind while you're watching this thing that may not be about anything. And I've always found that to be very powerful.
Paranoia
Agent, for the weird places it went, is a nonstop. You know, how do you make a kid with a baseball bat in rollerblades and a bat, how do you make that scary? And it was utterly frightening.
It was really scary.
Frightening. No. The episode where all the people are working on the cartoon, and it keeps showing the different people and stuff like that. That scared the crap out of me, but it was hilarious at the same time.
You mean just the fear of production?
The thing that was scary was that like when you find out what actually happened, and the guy is escaping with the tape, and he's trying to get the tape back as he's driving on the freeway. Inexplicably, this kid in rollers, he starts seeing that he's following him. And his terror becomes completely palpable, and it's horrifying. It really is.
No, that's great execution, and that's, you know, I mean, like with Watanabe, it's or Watanabe or whatever.
I think
his
it's
name
Watanabe.
Is.
Yeah, my piano teacher had the same last name, so that's probably
it's kind of like get with it because I've been every week or so I check the the Anime News Network or something to see if there's a new thing down the pipe from this guy. And if you check his, like, listing, he's done some storyboarded stuff on episodes of Ergo Proxy and stuff like that, but he hasn't, like, done anything big since, like, the Baby Blue thing. That's the last thing he directed was this little... And he did this music video for that, pedophilia Russian chicks tattoo or whatever they were called.
Tattoo, nice, yeah.
But, I mean, Bebop was 98, and then you can give him time. You can say, then he did the movie, which was like, let's give him time for that, right? Which the movie was 2000, and then Champloo was 2004, and now it's 2009.
Five years.
It's like he's just been kind of like doing storyboards and bumping around, and it's like, come on, I want to see something new from this guy, something cool. But who knows? It will be a big announcement when he finally says, hey, I'm going to do this, and this is my new big project. But, I mean, I look at the anime industry, and it's like, I don't know, they're redoing Fullmetal Alchemist. They've already started airing them in Japan. It's not a continuation of the story. It's a, like, more faithful to the manga version or something, which sounds like it could be interesting if it's a different kind of take on it. But at the same time, it's essentially a remake of an existing successful show.
If it's got ponytails in it, I won't be watching.
Yeah, it's the character designs are the same. I mean, it's you're not gonna like it, but that's like kind of annoying. I don't know, but that's where we are with anime, I guess. Not a lot. If I've finished some series, as I could tell you what I thought of them. I finished the Read or Die TV show. I saw the OAV years ago, just a 3-part thing. It was on Adult Swim, and I thought that was kind of fun, kind of weird, kind of different. In the same way that Escaflowne kind of confused me, and I felt like this isn't really that great. I wanted to revisit it again, so I rewatched it and then watched the television show, which is really very slow going, and then gets kind of interesting and weird towards the end.
Right.
In terms of, like, basically the good guy and the organization in the OAV. They kind of hint at him, and then they hint at this other, like, big organization, and the halfway point...
Isn't it OVA?
OVA, OAV, doesn't matter. Original Animated Video, Original Video Animation.
Yeah, I think it's OVA.
Okay. He ends up being the bad guy, like, actually being the bad guy. And you think, well, no, that's going to turn around or something, but no, that's the actual bad guy, is the guy that was the good guy in the original thing. So that was different, but... and it had some good music and some kind of good mood... I think that seems to be like what anime does best, in my opinion, is sometimes it's not even about stories, it is about mood. Because, like, I can watch The Big O about once a year, and yeah. I've seen the ending, and the ending is kind of confusing. And even if you figure it out and kind of get, okay, it's sort of a Truman Show, artificial, whole world's a stage thing, there are still some fantastic fights in that show, first off, I enjoy. And then there's just some great, like, noir mood going on that I'd love to sit there and just watch the show for that. So, you know, that's how I guess that's the big, that can be a big cop-out for me for why I enjoy a lot of anime that maybe some other people don't like or whatever.
So it looks like Watanabe is an associate producer on the upcoming live action.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to involve all the people it says all the in Japan. People yeah, and they have to okay the script and everything, yeah. So. And Reeves had met with them twice. This is like the second time you said, so they seem all real convinced. I mean, all the news so far sounds like if they're going to do it, it might work. Who knows? Maybe they could bring the Warshawskis in and they could do another.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I like what they did with Speed Racer, you know? I mean, I don't know. I'm going to forego seeing it till I actually finish the show, which I will finish probably this fall or something like that. I don't know when. I'm in no rush, but I will get it done.
Finish it and move on to something else, man.
I move on to other things. It doesn't, at the same time.
It doesn't indicate the death knell of your anime watching.
No, I know it doesn't. It certainly doesn't.
I think you've set it up as that, though.
Well, at one point I did when it was like one of the only three shows I'd seen, and I was like, you know, I want to get more into this stuff because I definitely liked. I mean, you say you weren't in a position to want to like anything about anime, and I was in a position to want to like everything about it when I was a kid. I mean, I remember Voltron and Thundercats, and I was like, I want to see more stuff that is like this. It's like drawn like this and has action, like a lot of action. I mean, Looney Tunes is great. I could never stand basic, generic Disney stuff.
Oh, man, I loved the Disney
stuff. Fucking Mickey Mouse is the most bland.
Mickey was lame. I liked watching the Donald Duck stuff.
Donald Duck was the only one I could kind of get because furious. He was always angry about everything and couldn't talk, and that was great.
Nobody got him when he said anything. Yeah. And the funny thing is, finally, when they introduced his family, they could all talk, and he couldn't. So it was just like he has a speech impediment.
No, and I mean, and I loved the Scrooge McDuck.
DuckTales was great.
I love that stuff, but just the generic Disney cartoons. I couldn't. I didn't like most of them because they weren't. I don't know. Looney Tunes were more characters.
Looney Tunes had the same thing though, because I don't like watching Sylvester and Tweety. I don't like watching. The racist Mexican mouse, Speedy Gonzales.
I didn't like those either. I loved some Porky Pig stuff.
I hate Porky Pig. Daffy Duck was good when it was him and Bugs.
Or him
I
and
liked,
Marvin.
I liked almost all the Bugs Bunny stuff because those are generally the ones where...
Did you see the one with the gremlin?
I don't remember. It's been so long since I used to watch it.
It's the one where the bomber... is about to crash, and then it runs out of gas like 3 feet above, and then stops because it ran out of gas. And then they just get off.
That's good.
It's one of the only ones where Bugs is like the mark. You know, usually he's messing with everybody. Yeah. It's the one of the only ones where the gremlin's messing with him the whole time. It's kind of a weird twist up on it.
And a lot, honestly, a lot of the best Looney Tunes stuff, especially when Chuck Jones was involved, was the stuff that wasn't about normal characters, and they ended up going back to them a lot. But the thing with the wolf and the sheepdog.
I think
they
remember.
They would check in before work and talk about how they're going and drink some coffee. And they would punch their time cards. And then they would have this terribly violent, antagonistic relationship toward each other. And then at the end of the day, they would punch out and...
See you later.
Yeah, see you tomorrow, man. It's like, all right, see you later.
No, I've got Looney Tunes Gold Collection Volume 1, and I've never watched it. I would definitely want to watch it, though, at some point, to revisit. Because I think I'm a pretty big fan of most general animations.
This leads into something interesting. I found a gem recently, and Blaine Schwacki was kind enough to point this out.
The former podcaster who's former still erstwhile, around.
Erstwhile.
Yeah. Estranged from the Feudal Podcast.
I gotta say, I can generally trust his taste. I don't normally like to, because a lot of the things he wants to show me is just retarded, utterly stupid.
Jesus, like, it's... I think he kind of jumps on the bandwagon of the internet.
He always
sometimes
jumps on bandwagons, but...
But he thinks he's being ironic about it, and it's like, you know what, I don't
this
care.
This that he told me about was not a bandwagon Blaine. Jumping. He just happened to see it, and it was fantastic, and it was... You know, people love Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm.
SpongeBob holds on to a little bit of what has some Ren and Stimpy
like
stuff.
20%.
In that the funniest things are... A weirdly drawn facial expression.
Uh-huh. You mean the still frames? Like from Ren and Stimpy?
Horribly
disgusting still frames that were super detailed?
Yes.
With boils and flies and stuff?
The whatever Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack is an utter riot. I've now seen about 10 episodes of the show, and it's the old school 15-minute chunks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 2 50-minute stories.
Not that pun one. I got in on the first half of that pun one, and I'd never seen it before, and I'm like, this is great.
Totally. It is so... They're alternately... The design is so dark and scary, and, like, it's this old-school piratey type deal, but it's, like, all these browns and grays, and it's this dingy, scary world.
It's like in a sewer.
And this
or
kid is so ridiculously upbeat, and they play the facial expression thing to hilarious. They did this thing last night as I was watching it that I started laughing uncontrollably, even though it wasn't really funny. It was just like, I can't believe no one ever thought of that before. You know, the thing where they used to do in Looney Tunes, when you show some animal trying to look all cutesy, they make its pupils gigantic.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they did that where he goes, wow! And his eyes grow huge and black, and they get so black that white spots come up from the beginning, and his eyes turn back to normal. Like...
Cycled through.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like they've just done every extreme with this thing, and there's fantastic jokes in every one, and like the timing and everything is perfect. And
this is Cartoon Network original, right?
It is, and it was created by this guy named Thurup von Orman, but he's not involved in any of the episodes. The creative director is J.G. Quintel or J.C. Quintel, and he's either the storyboard guy. He's always the creative director of every episode, but sometimes he's the storyboard guy and the writer as well. Mm-hmm. It's obviously this is his baby, but he didn't create it. It's kind of like the guy who made SpongeBob, you know, got rich off of it. He never had anything to do with it.
He created
the characters.
I can't imagine that.
He went to Humboldt State. You all know that story.
Oh, no, yeah. I didn't know that one.
Yeah, the guy who created SpongeBob was a marine biologist from Humboldt State.
Sounds about right.
And he found out that wasn't paying the bills, so
now
he created
the
cartoon character. Yeah, and now he's got to be one of the richest cartoon creators ever. But Flapjack is something that I'd highly recommend. It's got the old Brian Doyle Murray as this guy named Captain Knuckles. He's some weird creature who has... his arms and legs are made out of wood. His butt's made out of wood. He calls it his sitting muscle. I mean, it's weird. It definitely looks like a child's show, but it's just got all the commanded facial expression and not the artwork of Ren and Stimpy, but it kind of holds true to that spirit. And the artwork is just this crazy lowbrow stuff that ends up just working perfectly. A lot of the character design is really kind of frightening looking and evil looking, and then you got Flapjack and his kind of surrogate mother, which is this whale named Bubby. I can't believe I'm talking about this. It's such a stupid kind of childish idea, but just such a great show. I don't know. A lot of the other stuff, considering that every once in a while you'll see something like SpongeBob or Flapjack that comes out on any network, and you kind of hope that a lot of other stuff is going to come out that will be equally good, but there's just so few good actual kid cartoons made. It's just really kind of depressing that it's so... Like how, you know...
I know what you mean.
How hard can it be? Because these people who came up with these weird ideas, who just had the right idea about execution, made some great stuff.
So you talk about mean-spiritedness. Some of these cartoon shows that are on now are just like Total Drama Island and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff are just like they're... Like, are the kids watching those and thinking that those are the kind of characters that
think
they should...
Any kids would watch this.
Or like 16, have you seen that one? It's just a bunch of douchey-looking kids that are just totally superficial and there's nothing exciting about it. I mean, action cartoons, like you said, for kids are... we're all turning into... It's a Tyler Durden society, you know? It's going to be a bunch of kids that are raised by no good action cartoons. Because, you know, if we were all raised by the TV... We were raised by Voltron. We were raised by Optimus Prime. You know, like that wired our
Voltron and Transformers as you did.
I didn't watch a huge lot of Transformers, but Voltron I ended up getting in on because they were airing it.
I really saw DuckTales, G.I. Joe.
Yeah, definitely.
Ninja Turtles,
definitely.
Batman,
of course.
And I want to say Rainbow Bright and My Little Pony.
Ooh, because you had sisters.
And sometimes I watched a little-known Disney film called show called The Gummy Bears.
With the Duke? What was the Duke's name?
I don't remember.
Do you remember the one where the Duke drank the juice?
Oh man, did he go just
bouncing shit? All over the place? Yeah. It was. It was a perfect way to describe it.
My mom didn't really want me watching the Smurfs because the antagonist was a sorcerer. And I assume he got his powers from Satan, you know?
Of course, but that's the antagonist. Gargamel. It's not like Gargamel's a good guy. There's nothing to be emulated about Gargamel.
No. But I think the Smurfs kind of went down the magic road a little bit too.
And those mushrooms, yeah.
Yeah, magic's bad stuff to a Christian mother and her homeschooled children.
Of course.
And then I also watched I watched Garfield when it was on. I was a huge Garfield fan as a child.
Not the Friends, just Garfield?
Garfield, the comic strip. Uh-huh. The hardest I ever remember laughing as a child was we were in a bookstore somewhere. I found a Garfield... It might have been like the 8th volume. They were done in volumes. You know?
Okay, not to interrupt, but
John Davis.
You remember laughing? Now, what does that mean as a child? Because I don't. I can't remember laughing hard about anything as a kid.
About the age of 5 or whenever. I mean, I could read at a very very early age. I started reading when I was like 3 or something like that.
Whoa.
We were in like a Walden Books or something, and my parents were looking at something, and my brother and sister. We didn't have the youngest one yet. Doing something, and I picked up this Garfield book, and I just kind of sat down, and I was reading this strip by strip by strip, and I got to one that just slayed me, and I couldn't stop laughing. It was just unbelievably funny, and I gotta say, I was a retard, probably, because Garfield is one of the least funniest, it's probably the least funny comic strip ever made, and there's actually a great thing on 4chan and Encyclopedia Dramatica that if you ever bring up Garfield, people start printing a slew of strips that they made themselves. There's this thing called a Garfield comic editor,
mm-hmm.
which is you basically it gives you every single panel like from anyone ever made, and then you just fill in, you just make your own dialogue, and the trick is you try to emulate a Garfield strip by you have someone say something,
yeah,
then the other person in the second panel responds to it in a way that is not related at all, and then the third panel is them staring at each other. And that equals the humor that you get out of everything. Except for they're much funnier, because in a lot of cases, someone will say something in the first panel, and the second person in the second panel, all that will have changed is that the person's eyes suddenly are facing different directions. And then in the third panel, the first person's eyes do the same thing. So suddenly it's like, what the hell just happened?
This is stupid.
Anyway...
Yes.
So, I would watch TV for some Garfield and Friends, or just Garfield before mm-hmm. that. U.S. Acres was not that good. I didn't like reading about Orson the Pig and his mm-hmm. barnyard buddies, or watching him. But this was the thing that really killed me. Let's see, flipping through the channels. Hey, cool. It must be Garfield because it's a show about an orange cat.
Heathcliff?
No, damn it. It was Heathcliff.
and
Heathcliff was terrible.
With Riff Raff?
Because he was a Poochie. He was a Poochie of the yellow cat world. Hey, I'm so cool. You kids want to do what I do? Woo, I'm going to kick over this can and I'm going to rape this other cat over here. And then we're all going to go and get drunk.
I think that was Riff Raff.
No, it was Heathcliff. He was a real son of a bitch. And it was like, I was always like, flipping through the channels and like,
you know, I would try to.
I would go to a friend's house. Hey, let's watch some cartoons. Yeah, what time is it? Oh my gosh, let's hope that something good is on. It's just Heathcliff. Let's go hang ourselves instead. You know, that'll be more fun.
I would try to watch Heathcliff because it made me so angry and frustrated. Why do I not get why
this
is
like,
on TV?
Yeah, and then you'd be like, what a terrible ripoff of Garfield. But the Heathcliff strip came out like 3 years before John Davis made Garfield. So John Davis was ripping off Heathcliff. He's like, I got a great idea. I'll take this orange sassy cat, and instead of making him a badass, I'll make him a fat ass who likes lasagna and doesn't do anything.
What a cat really would be.
Yeah. Except for he likes lasagna.
Yes. And then talk about other cat animated cat cartoons. You get to Eek.
Eek was great.
Eek was fabulous.
Eek was really good. There was a decent chunk of time, I want to say it's probably the early 90s, where there weren't many bad cartoons. There was a lot of great stuff coming out.
Like, the X-Men cartoon was great.
Yeah. They were finally deciding that they could make a lot of cool cartoons off of like comics. I mean, they had done it before with Spider-Man jump back in the days, but an X-Men back in the 80s and everything.
Yeah, they had Spider-Man and X-Men. They had Batman.
Yeah.
Batman was just far and above everything else.
It was incredible, yeah.
I remember watching it. It took me a while to get used to the character design for Batman because they made him barrel-chested. Like, he was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember watching the first episode. And I remember the first episodes I saw, I seem to think, for me, it aired 4:30 or 4 o'clock on afternoons. And it was great. It was like the perfect, like, after homework, mm-hmm. do that, watch that. But the first two episodes were on a Saturday morning, and it was the two-parter about Red Claw. And it was like this, like, international spy, like, with nerve gas and everything. And I'm like, this is crazy for Batman. This is like way beyond what you expect for the average cartoon. And then, like, they followed that up, like, in their premieres with, like, the Clayface two-parter, which was, like, super, like, human tragedy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then they establish Harvey Dent for a couple episodes, mm-hmm. and then they do the whole arc with him turning into Two-Face.
It was flawlessly done. It was really flawlessly done. The whole series was
animated on black paper, so it could be super noir, and had Shirley Walker and the Warner Brothers orchestra available to do like themes for every episode, like a different theme.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
We were
done,
spoiled,
man.
Being kids in the
90s. And then on top of that, you got stuff that really, I mean, I think The Tick. The Tick gave a whole generation of people who are now our age their sense of humor, because it was like this is parody, and not only is it parody, but it's funny on its own besides what it's parodying,
and it works, and it's not of course the Mad Bomber What Bombs at Midnight, mm-hmm. with the sidekicks,
the Fledermaus,
and the side kicks lounge.
Well, the thing that killed me about when they made the live action show was one of the things that really bothered me was they took the Fledermaus and they made him it was Nestor Carbonell, and they called him Batman Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was dumb. That's a stupid play on words type deal.
Yeah.
But Deflatormaus was great because it almost sounds like that name means some sort of bat thing. But it's a Wagner opera. It's spelled that way too. It's D-I-E and then Fledermaus. And it's like, it was a really, you know, like the best, always the best kids' cartoons are funny to adults.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell some's a good kid cartoon if an adult enjoys it. Because even, I mean, the kids are going to love it either way. You know, the kids obviously they like things like the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, where for some reason the Grim Reaper talks like a Jamaican. cartoons with childish animation that are made specifically for adults, I never liked the oblongs, stuff like that. That just doesn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. I will watch. What's the one about the jerk and his brother who live in New York?
Mission Hill.
Yeah, I never really liked that one.
I got a kick out of that. I thought that was. Okay.
I know you're a big fan of home movies. I appreciate, I really like the H. John Benjamin stuff. Other than that, not so much.
So much of that, I really, that's what I mean. It's like, I can't tell. There are times I'm watching that show, and I feel like I get your humor well enough, and I'm like watching Home Movies episodes, and I'm like, there's stuff here that I just know you would find delightful, but I guess you'd have to kind of sit through it.
That falls into my thing, though, where I don't just like, I think it's a waste of cartoon to have people sit around talking.
Yeah, but
it really is. I understand usually that the way they talk is kind of funny and stuff.
No, but there are like stories to it. Like, there's a theme and there's like outcome. There's character behavior.
After we're done here, you're gonna watch some Flapjack with me. You're gonna see what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay, I get you. Sure.
I'm gonna show you. I saved a couple of ones I thought were.
Well, hilarious. I just want to bring up this one last thing. It sounds like, and I'm gonna be all overly optimistic because that's what I still do because I'm still young.
Don't do it.
MTV2 is going to start doing on Friday nights because, like, there's no real competition. Like, Adult Swim isn't that great on Fridays and stuff. Right. They're going to start at, like, 10 o'clock doing their classic 90s stuff. They're going to show episodes of The State, of Beavis.
Oh, nice.
Of The Max.
No way, really?
They're going to show old...
Such a well-animated
show. They're going to show promos of...
They're going to show Eon Flux and stuff?
They're going to show Eon Flux, Liquid Television. They're going to show promos with your buddy, what's his name, is the cab driver, and Dennis Leary, and everything. Nice. It's going to be like... And old videos, too.
Wow.
They're going to do just the awesome stuff, because MTV was awesome. Yeah, you probably weren't allowed to watch any of it, right?
Oh, I did, though.
And, you know, great. Are you being sarcastic when you talk about
this stuff? No, my mom went out of the house, and I would watch MTV until I heard the car pull up.
Yeah, it was
awesome.
And
I would turn it back to Judge Judy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Judge Judy, interesting. I'm going to go do my homework.
That counts as something, right? Yeah. No, but there was, I mean, yeah, The Max. I recently started watching The Max again, and just watching it because I hadn't seen it in years. And found that it was like online because there's no official release for it yet. The state's going to get an official release finally for all the episodes, nice. Which I'm looking forward to. But yeah, I'm gonna have to check it out because it's like that's
very cool. I'm glad
that's
to hear that.
Very cool. I'm hoping that it works. But if it starts at 10 and it's trying to cram that much stuff into it, I don't know. Is it going to go from like 10 to 4?
They'll probably just split it up every other week or something like that.
No, sure, I don't know. Sure they should start it at like freaking 6 o'clock and just program it properly. Anyway, that's that. That's cartoons. That's our childhood that we... I feel like there's a lot of nostalgia there, but there's also, like, it was superior material.
It was superior material.
And, I mean, we know
except
that...
Except for Heathcliff.
Except for Heathcliff was terrible.
I think he was always trying to bang some cat, too.
Yeah. It was, I mean,
she
I think...
Was like, oh, no.
I feel like Eek the Cat was really just a parody of Heathcliff. Like, they really just looked at, like...
That was just good humor.
And they were like, this is terrible.
You know, there was some stuff I liked about Bobby's World, too. And the show where...
Uncle Ted and the Elephant Lodge and the Elephants...
Yeah, Bobby's World had some stuff in it. But the show that freaking Louis Anderson had, Life with Louis...
Oh, with his dad?
Yeah, there was times when that show was really funny, too.
It okay.
Mostly wasn't. But
no,
like,
yeah.
Can you imagine now if you took some cut-rate comedian and let him design a cartoon? Like... What if you just walked up to, like, Greg Giraldo and was like, we're going to give you a kid's cartoon? He'd be like, what?
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Seriously? I'm Greg Giraldo. Like, what are you doing giving Howie Mandel and Louis Anderson cartoons?
Well, they gave one to Kid and Play, and they gave one to Macaulay Culkin also, yeah, if you remember that. Yeah. NBC's cartoon line always sucked. Fox was good.
Great stuff.
CBS was better earlier. They had Muppet Babies and stuff like when I was a kid, and I loved that show. That was great.
Well, I want to say...
I still think the best comedian ever for stand-up comedy is Fozzie. And I thought he was going to be on an episode of Craig Ferguson one night, because they had him in the opening.
They
had Fozzie and somebody else, one of the guests. Fozzie and Dennis Leary were talking in like the green room.
Right.
And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. It's going to be Dennis Leary and then Fozzie. And then Craig comes in, and he's talking to Dennis. And then Dennis is like, well, I got a couple different stories and everything. And I was like... He's like, okay, well, if it's cool, if we go along, we'll just bump the act, the comedy act that we got at the end. And then they kind of look down at Fozzie, and he's kind of like, well, come on, guys, don't bump me. I don't want to get bumped. Come on.
That's good.
He just had the best jokes. My dad and I would always be able to sit and watch Muppet Babies, and we both would laugh at Fozzie. It was the only thing I ever bonded with my father in.
Was over Fozzie?
Was over Fozzie and his ridiculous pun humor and the fact that he insisted on going waka waka after every joke.
Did you ever see that? I watched the episode like two or three times recently for some reason, but this Family Guy episode where somebody mentions one of their non sequitur things about the poor dubbing of Muppets characters in cartoons, and they cut to Kermit saying something in a non-Kermit voice to the Swedish chef.
Uh-huh.
And the Swedish chef just answers in normal English, like, yeah, yeah. And then Fozzie walks up, and it's this deep, dark black guy's voice, and he goes, waka waka, who wants to hear a funny-ass joke? And that was, like, that was the only thing they did, and I just always think of that now when I think of Fozzie, unfortunately. Oh, boy.
Well, we can cap off our animation discussion by discussing Futurama.
Okay.
I think, bar none, probably one of the funniest...
Especially the recent stuff.
Of recent stuff. But that's not a kid's cartoon.
No,
that's a cartoon, adult cartoon. But just all over the place, great humor, multiple levels, and apparently they haven't gotten a lot of success because most people kind of watch the first movie and we're like, yeah, it's like everyone comes out and does their bit and
that disappears. That was not the way to do it with movies. Yeah. It really wasn't.
But it sounds like it was because they're getting another season.
Well, and the way they need to...
I haven't seen the last two movies. I'm going to make a point of
seeing it. I heard that the third one was the best out of all of them, and I stopped after the second one. The thing that's best is that when you don't have to do like almost fan service with, which is not the right word for it, but with side characters, which is what they felt like they had to do in the movies. But if you just watched through the original series, like the most hilarious characters were the king from Omicron Percy I-8,
Lur,
and Morbo.
Oh yeah,
and the lines that Morbo ended up getting,
uh-huh.
Like when he and. When he and his, you know, the female co-star,
wonderful.
When they were drunk for some reason.
No, was it the brain slug one? And they were both just might stupid? Have
been. And she said something about. He said something. He was talking about the. He said he was looking at the teleprompter, and he said, "What's that one that looks like? Looks like a little man with his arms out." And she's like, "T," and he goes, "Hello, little man. I will crush you, or I will destroy you." And then, like the lines where when they're hosting the presidential debates,
yes,
and he goes, "We have tonight with us puny human number one, puny human number two, and Morbo's personal friend Richard Nixon."
His good friend,
and Nixon goes, "Hiya, Morbo. How's the family?" And he goes, "Belligerent and numerous."
But the best part about that is that you have to see it. He's like got his cards lined. He's lining up his cards and he's like adjusting his glasses as he says it, kind of like offhanded.
Yeah.
No, I remember
they do the thing where he taps his cards on the table a lot too.
Yeah. I remember mentioning to Daniel when we were at Comic-Con one time for the Futurama thing, like as it was quieting down, I was like saying something about Morbo and we were sitting dead center. I was like, man, I hope they're going to do some more episodes with Morbo in this season and stuff. Because he's great, you know. He was like my favorite character in the show.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And then Greening, like later on, like zeroed in on that, and he was like talking about Morbo, and I was like, "That's great. He heard what I said. He did hear what I said."
I like how you're as you're saying this, you're like saying it like you're trying to convince not only me but yourself.
I am indeed trying to convince everybody that. But yeah, I'm
that you had Matt Groening's ear for a moment.
I did. I believe I did. Yeah. More Futurama episodes. I don't know if Comedy Central will waste them because their lineup is so weird. They've got so much stock in like. First of all, South Park. They almost kind of can't count on South Park because it's so it's new episodes. Run it. It's such a weird schedule for that show. You know, it's like six episodes that are new every 6 months or something, and it's
you definitely the one nice thing about being a network is that like, you know, all the stuff that came out on Cartoon Network and Comedy Central and all that stuff is like their seasons all have to be shorter, and so they end and like it's just done, and then you're like watching reruns and stuff. But I mean, Fox is still pumping out new shows of Family Guy and Simpsons every week, and it's like every single week there's a new episode.
Yeah, there's like 26 episodes
a
season.
Yeah, and despite what you think about it, you know, you can always watch some new stuff, and that would be fantastic for Futurama and anything else that's even remotely good. I'm somewhat interested to see the new Mike Judge deal on ABC.
The environmentalist.
Yeah. I'm as always stunned by the long lasting success of King of the Hill because it is so unfunny and so stupid.
I never watched it.
It's a sitcom. It's just a dumb sitcom, and they waste the time and money to animate it. It just kills me.
It's weird. I never want to watch it, and I never do. But if I ever do actually watch it, it's like the characters are okay. I don't mind it. It's weird. It's like very, disaffected to me. But now that it's on Adult Swim, I hate it because I'm always looking by and it's always
a waste of, it's a waste of prime time on there. I understand what they're doing it because they were sick of having to show four episodes of Family Guy back to back before they get into the 15-minute stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I understand, but come on, get something
better. No, Adult Swim needs to get their shit together big time. And I feel like they're seriously getting ripped off because Futurama is getting another season because of Adult Swim's ad nauseum reruns on them.
Yeah.
And so it'd be great if they could capitalize on the new episodes. They'll
get it eventually. I mean, it seems like they got to deal with Fox for pretty much everything now. I mean, they
lost the contract to Futurama. They gave it up.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, that's something that can be bought again. And especially
Comedy Central, by buying that, bought all future.
Oh, gosh. They would. I mean, I think the thing is you sign a certain year deal for any stuff like that.
Possibly,
Comedy Central probably didn't have the sway to.
Well, that's just the thing. Comedy Central, like.
Comedy Central really has nothing. I mean,
they haven't handled Futurama very well.
Cartoon Network's got to be a more valuable network than Comedy Central. Comedy Central has South Park, and then it's got a bunch of crap.
Well, yeah.
That's it. And South Park can't be that big a moneymaker anymore. I don't think it ever was.
Well, it's just not substantial enough. Even if it is, it makes some money for, 10 weeks out of the year.
And then they use it to lead into whatever their new show is, and whatever new show that gets canceled the next year. The only thing they've had with any sort of lasting success at any point was, besides that, is the fact that Sarah Silverman show has went two seasons. I don't even know if it's come back for a third one or not.
Well, and they got Reno 911, which is easy to produce.
Yeah, yeah. And that's syndication now. That's always a good time passer.
Yeah.
That also is nothing substantial. It's nothing that would get people excited that a new episode is coming out.
Which is why I feel like Futurama is going to, if it gets 13 new episodes or 26 or whatever it's going to get on Comedy Central, it's just going to come and go, and it's not going to get any footing.
The thing you saw came out the day after the one that I saw, and that one came from Variety, mm-hmm. and Variety had quotes from Fox executives who said they bought it. So it's Fox at 26.
That's great.
It has to be. Yeah.
That's a full
season. The thing from the day before was from somebody who had worked on the show who thought that they were getting 13 on Comedy Central.
That's going to be
great. And then the next day, Variety announced
I can't wait for more Futurama episodes because it's the shit.
I just love how Fox now has had to bend over backwards you know, they basically had to kiss the butts of now two shows. The thing is, in this case,
well, let's hope, because the Futurama guys are actually funny guys that deserve some good writing. And let's hope they can build their team back up. Aaron Ehas was working on Avatar, but that ended a year ago. And he's great. If they get him back on the team and David X. Cohen and all that stuff.
It'll be there,
but
sure.
Seth MacFarlane is played out. I'm sick of that guy.
He is. You know what, though?
I can watch American
Dad. I'm over
Dad.
My Family Guy backlash now, yeah. and I've noticed that the stuff from their first and second seasons back were awful, and almost everything from this season back have been really good now.
I have not seen a huge amount of this season.
The new stuff
I'll play catch up over the summer.
So it went through two things where they were like almost. They were so pleased with themselves that they were almost just getting down to referencing themselves.
Yeah.
And that does not work with that show.
No.
And now they're back to like the funniest ones I've seen this year, the best bits are things that are just funny and they're not talking about something else. And it's been fantastic. The one we talked about where they made the handy
quacks.
That
sounds really funny.
And then the one where Stewie was doing roids.
Yeah,
the comedy just came from the situations. And it was like,
yeah, it's situation comedy.
It was just like
that?
The thing that in the South Park episode, basically. It was like, it was almost like, you know, they were like, hey, you know, they're right.
They're right, yeah. I think that they knew they were right, too. And that was where they kind of shut up. You know, he was doing a bazillion, like, commencement speeches, and he was the big guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Well, the thing about MacFarlane is that he's never, since the first season, he really hasn't had a lot to do with the show. He does voices. So it's hard to blame him for a lot of the stuff.
Well,
he gets most of the money, of course, and mm-hmm. he does half the voices in the show.
And he's the producer.
But he's not writing it, you know. Yeah. The worst episodes were the ones in the, I don't even remember what season it's called now, because I remember the DVDs I have, all of the original series, were in volumes. And it split seasons in half and stuff. Mm. So I don't know. I remember if it was three or four seasons that it lasted before it was canceled.
It was three.
Okay, so the fourth and fifth seasons, the greatest majority of the episodes were written
by Borstein.
By Borstein, and she is awful, and she is super, super political, and she's not funny, and it was just belligerent, awful, hateful stuff.
There was a decent bit of that,
like any of the Lois Bryan heavy episodes mm-hmm. are like just some sort of super left-wing, bash-you-over-the-head thing where you mock Christianity and you mock the right and you mock all this stuff openly, very openly, and then it ends. And they've gotten back into, like, just, like, here's a stupid story and some funny stuff and some good lines. And
well, then I'll check it back out, because I was kind of about ready to be done with it at a certain point. You're beating the same dead horses for three seasons in a row, and it stopped being funny a while ago. But, I mean, yeah, if Futurama gets going, I'd be happy, happy. And then the Samurai Jack guy, Genndy Tartakovsky, is supposed to have a new show going to Cartoon Network.
Nice.
But Cartoon Network's trying this whole ad campaign for Wednesday Reel. Wednesday Reel. They had done live actions for a bit, bits of things here and there, but I don't know. If they just stick with Wednesday Reel, that's fine. I just feel like, shit, they got to get the Toonami thing going again. They got to at least get the guys that created the original anime part of Adult Swim, who were the Toonami guys. They should give them Saturday Night back and really try to reconstruct it. I don't know. They could do something cool with it. They could make it like older shows. I don't know. If MTV's 90s thing really ends up being successful, then that will show that, like, oh yeah, all those guys want to see stuff from the 90s. They want to see those cartoons that they saw on Sci-Fi Channel again,
right,
and stuff that you know. People want to see, you know, I don't know, whatever else it was. You know, Vampire Hunter D on Adult Swim and stuff. Speaking of which, not speaking of anything, but Adult Swim did just recently air the G.I. Joe Resolute. Did you see that?
Mm.
I can't tell because I'm not a big expert of the original cartoon. I mean, I saw a good number of them, but it feels like it's basically just like it takes where the original cartoon ended and just runs with it, but takes it like real seriously and like has people get killed and shit.
Right.
And so it's kind of awesome. It's like there's a bunch of stuff with like Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes and this backstory on them, and then Cobra's all like, you know, he basically uses this energy weapon to take out Moscow and kills 10 million people in the first part. And so you're like, wow. I mean, it's still dumb though, because it's annoying. Because, like, you know, it's an anime thing. So it's got probably pretty high-end production value, but it seems like all they can do these days with those, for anything outside of that, is they can afford to do little short vignettes that maybe they can compile into an anthology that's about an hour. And you really can't tell much of a real good story that way. You can just kind of do, like, okay, an action sequence, now another action sequence, now another action sequence, kind of loosely connect them with a few bits of exposition, and there you go. That's it. And so it was a little too short and everything, but it was kind of fun and cool. And Seth and I, as we're watching it, Seth's like, they should have just taken this script and made this the live action movie.
Hmm.
You know? And I'm like, I think, I don't know, we'll see. With this MTV2 thing, I mean, it's gonna flop, of course it's gonna flop, because it's not Hip Hop Saturday, Sucker Free, whatever bullshit. Because our generation doesn't watch TV anymore, right? We just sit around on political blogs and streaming videos of who knows what. But, if it does, I mean, let's all assume, and I don't know, maybe it won't. I mean, Transformers did really well, and they're making a sequel. Maybe G.I. Joe will do really well.
But it's not.
If it bombs, I think it'll be the fastest reboot we'll get. I think we will get, like, within 18 months, I think we'll get a proper G.I. Joe movie. I think they'll turn right around and make it.
I don't think so.
They'll be like, okay, wait, the fanboys actually just want us to...
They want
the parrot on Shipwreck's neck.
Anyone who liked it to begin with knew how stupid it was.
Yeah, but that would still be a great stupid movie.
No.
As an action movie?
No.
No, you don't think so?
No.
Not at all.
What
about Voltron?
No.
Voltron. I've heard they're doing a live action Voltron, and I know it's going to be terrible probably, but that's the one I'm holding out to thinking will be awesome. I'm like, come on, do Voltron right. It could be so cool to see a giant fighting robot with growling hands and a sword that comes out of nowhere and robeasts that he cuts in half. He bisects them and then they explode. Voltron's maximum speed was like Mach 10. That's fast.
Not in space, it's not.
Point. Okay, well, anyway, if you want to listen to any more delightful discussions about things, including cartoons and whatnot, which is back to form for us tonight, you can check Futile Podcast on iTunes, or you can go graniteseed.com/futilepodcast. You can send us an email, futilepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know we have listeners after 2 years of doing this. That would be kind of cool. We'll be seeing ya.
therms connected. Infracell up. Mega thrusters are go.
Let's go, Voltron!